This podcast of the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour, presented by Firehouse Subs, is sponsored by AAA Heating and Air.
Attention homeowners, due to upcoming government regulations, the current energy efficiency ratings for HVAC systems will change. Current inventory cannot be sold after December 31st. As the year 2023 starts, customers can expect to pay an average of 30% more for a new HVAC unit that will meet the new government regulations.
So what does this mean for you, the customer? There's no better time to purchase a new HVAC system. AAA Heating and Air must empty their warehouse to make room for the new systems. No deals will be turned down. With their 15-year parts and labor warranty, plus guaranteed financing, they have made it possible for anyone to get a new system.
Call today and enjoy your new home comfort as quickly as tomorrow. But you can only get this special deal by calling 803-677-1500. AAA Heating and Air wants to give you their best deal possible on a new HVAC unit, but you have to call today, 803-677-1500.
And tell them you heard about this deal on 107.5 The Game's Gamecock Central podcast.
AAA Air, when you need us, AAA Heating and Air.
It's the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour, presented by Firehouse Subs, founded by firemen, with Pearson Fowler.
This has been in the works for a while. We're really excited to officially have the Gamecock Central Hour.
Chris Clark.
And JJ has accepted an invite to the Senior Bowl already, which is awesome, the Reese's Senior Bowl.
And Wes Mitchell.
I think he's well above 200 in the, like, the 210 range. A dude in the weight room, too, like from a strength standpoint.
On the home of the Gamecocks, 107.5 The Game. Game.
Two minutes after 11 o'clock on a Monday morning, it's the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour here on 107.5 The Game. And welcome in Pearson Fowler, Preston Thorne, Chris Clark, Wes Mitchell here with you. More thoughts on Carolina and Tennessee. Shane Beamer's weekly press conference, 1:30 this afternoon. He will have his final thoughts on the Tennessee game, as well as starting to look ahead to Clemson. We'll take that cue tomorrow. But today, sort of the de facto notebook dump day. So if you have any thoughts on Tennessee, get them in this last hour. Tomorrow we're talking Clemson. No show on Thursday, so we'll have to get all of our preview in basically tomorrow, and then, of course, save the rest and the predictions and such for Friday. But I want to start today by doing something that you all know that I don't like to do. But I'm going to do it. I'm going to give Wes Mitchell credit. At about the midway point of the season, we did a fun exercise, I thought, an instructive exercise. Who's Carolina's best 11 offensive players? And we went through, had a lot of similarities, but Wes had one notable difference. His offensive line was different than the offensive line that we'd seen for the entire season. Ja'Kai Moore, Vershawn Lee, Eric Douglas, Javon Gwynn, Dylan Wonnum. That was South Carolina starting five for most of the season. There's been some Trey Jones with Vershawn Lee out. And maybe we have seen the five that we saw on Saturday, but it's only been in spot duty. But as best I can remember, and I wanted to ask you and Chris, because y'all are better with, you know, lineups and snap counts and things like that. Was that the first time that we have seen South Carolina run extended action, Jalen Nichols at left tackle, Ja'Kai Moore at left guard?
That was the second time.
Second, okay.
They actually did that at Florida as well.
Ooh.
It was not for the entire game.
Okay.
I think, if I remember right, Trey Jones
started. Was sick.
Yep, Trey Jones started. And at some point in the game, I think maybe second quarter, they put Ja'Kai in at left guard, and then he played the rest of the game.
Okay.
And then that was the configuration for the entire game against Tennessee.
You said that in October. It made a lot of sense at the time. That left side of the line's been a turnstile for parts of the season for South Carolina. That was the best game the offensive line played. Now, here's the part that's hard to parse, and I'm glad that you see, this is why I asked you, because I knew you would know. The Florida game and the Tennessee game, opposite ends of the spectrum. So maybe they cancel each other out. Maybe it had more to do with Tennessee and Spencer and Marcus Satterfield. But it did kind of feel like watching those five that they'd finally, 11 games into the season, stumbled onto their best five offensive linemen. So tell me what you saw in October that made you think those were the best guys, and tell me why you do or do not think that that five can sustainably perform like they did on Saturday.
Yeah, I've just always really thought Ja'Kai was a guy who brought some extra athleticism to that side. And I think, if I'm going to be completely honest, I think I had Ja'Kai at left tackle and I moved Jalen in to left guard. Okay. But that was my personnel on
those
that.
Those were your five anyway.
Yeah, those are my five. And I just, Jalen's a guy who's been around a while. He is very athletic as well, very explosive. I think at times in the past he has struggled with the edge rush a little bit, just those super fast, twitchy guys you're going to see in the SEC. But he graded out at, what was it, 90, they said?
He was co-SEC Offensive Player of the Week, I think, with Spencer.
And the left side, if you really look at their offensive struggles this year, the right side has been pretty solid, and the left side has been more shaky. So you look at, you solidify that against Tennessee, and, all of a sudden, everything's clicking a little bit. And I don't think this was a bad Tennessee front. Like, there are some talented guys. Byron Young, really, really impressive pass rusher. He's actually from the state of South Carolina as well. South Carolina tried to get him out of Georgia military, and he went to Tennessee instead. Has had a phenomenal season for them. It's not like you were just playing some, it's an easy matchup. It was a good group, and I think it was a combination of the physical aspect, like they looked comfortable, but also the mental aspect. Like, I saw them picking up blitzes, picking up stunts, and then Spencer trusted them as well. He stepped up in the pocket. We talked about this yesterday. Just about every decision he made as far as when to navigate up in the pocket, when to get out of the pocket, when to throw on the run, when to throw away, it was like every single decision was the right one. So all those things cohesively sort of came together.
Chris, do you have quick access to PFF?
I can.
Okay, because this is not a hot take anymore, but Nate Atkins is Carolina's best tight end. And when they lined him up in the backfield as an extra pass protector, because Carolina ran a lot more two-man routes in that game, I noticed, than I have for most of the season, I think. And using him as that extra blocker helped. I bet he graded out astonishingly high, both run blocking and pass blocking, because he threw a bunch of good blocks in that game.
Yeah, we had some people, and I will look that up. Wes had pointed out against Florida, and that was kind of one of those things that was easy to miss. Like, a lot of people after that game, the reaction wasn't, let's dive into this tape, see what they were doing.
I did not watch the game.
Right, so, they did that against Florida, and Nate Atkins was in the backfield against Florida almost as much as he had one less snap in the backfield against Florida than he did against Tennessee.
Wow.
Again, easy to miss.
Mm-hmm.
And that just illustrates when people are saying the entire game plan was completely different. They burned the playbook. They created a new playbook in 3 days and installed it. No, there were some differences, and we've covered some of those, but some of the concepts are very similar. Nate Atkins against Florida backfield, he played 48 total snaps. He lined up 9 times in the backfield per PFF. Against Tennessee, he played 69 snaps, lined up 10 times in the backfield. But we've seen him, we saw him, here's where he lined up against Tennessee. 10 in the backfield, 38 in line, which would be your kind of typical tight end alignment. Slot, 12.
Wow.
He lined up in the slot a good bit. One of those little out routes that he had, he was in the slot, lined up out wide once. So they used him in a variety of ways, and he was definitely he's been a critical part of what they're doing, a huge part of that.
It's a good tight end room, and I think he's emerged as the best guy in that room.
Let's give credit on two ends of it. One, he was the very last available scholarship for South Carolina this past offseason, and I thought, hey, maybe find a safety, like maybe add another DB to this group. A lot of people sort of criticized that move. And he's come in. He's been a big part of what they do in all facets of the offense, I think. And then, to me, that was such a savvy move to do that because, as we've talked about, we've been talking about more in the running game, but you're missing Marshawn Lloyd. You're missing CBS. So you don't want the smaller Juju as your pass pro guy on third and passing downs, right? Well, you're wasting Jaheim if in passing situations you stand him in the backfield and say, go pass pro. And that's not a strength of his at all anyway. So the move is put Atkins almost as Rattler's like personal protector in the backfield on that. And now you can still put Jaheim out in routes if you want on those third down situations. So I thought that was incredibly savvy. It didn't get any credit against Florida because the overall Well, we all saw it, but pretty sharp move there.
Yeah, but I mean, as a lead blocker in the run game as well, and we've seen him get some of his first action in the passing game in the last couple of weeks. It was what, one catch against Florida and then two against Tennessee.
Good hands.
I mean, he's all around. He's there. I wonder why he hasn't emerged earlier. We can make our best guesses on that, but he's been doing everything for them. Well, he did everything for them in Tennessee week. Spencer, yes. Juice, yes. Tonka, like we talked about all the obvious stars in that game. This is what's fun about a Tuesday show. We can get in the weeds, and he emerged. I mean, he really jumped off the page to me as someone on a second watch.
You know what his hometown is? Knoxville, Tennessee.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Yep. That's cool.
Yep.
Pretty special.
Greg Atkins, his dad, former Tennessee assistant. Nate Atkins, overall grade, 75.4, which is a good grade. Mm-hmm. Fourth highest graded player on the offense. Hard to believe, like, there are some players, you know, PFF's average grade is what, Wes, 60?
60 is if you did nothing to help or nothing to hurt.
Hard to believe that anybody has below a baseline. They scored 63 points. Yeah. Everybody's offensive grade should be like a 90.
So Spencer was number one.
That's right.
Jalen Nichols number two?
No.
Juice.
Juice was number two.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I got this ready. Okay, here we go. What about Javon?
Nope. Javon's in the top 10. Who's got a number three guess? You got Spencer one, Juice two, Nate Atkins number four. Who can give three and five? Ooh, bonus points.
Man. Let me just say, Spencer should have had 100. I don't care. I don't care what is in the analytics. I don't care how they do it. He should have had 100, period. Okay, so Juice is two. That makes sense. Three or five has got to be Jaheim.
Jaheim is number three.
And number five is Josh Van.
Nope.
Dang it. Two touchdown catches, though.
Number five is...
We've named everyone on the offense now, so it's not even impressive if we get any more.
DJ?
That's right.
It's DJ. Nice.
Kerryon Joyner, number five.
He's... Man, I don't know how many snaps did he play?
Let's see. The Kerryon Joyner, just 19 snaps.
But they were very key 19 snaps. I feel like gave just enough. To give Chris credit, he said this during the Florida game. Obviously, it was one of the few bright spots in that game. Does he not look more explosive?
Yes.
Like, it felt like last year when they would run those plays, he couldn't quite accelerate quick enough to make it happen.
Now, is that physical, though, or is that mental? Can he go because he knows what he's supposed to be doing? Because that's what I felt like watching Saturday. Everybody was a half step quicker because everybody was actually executing with conviction, where it feels like we're watching them second guess a lot of these plays.
Yeah, that's why that early conversion was really impressive to me. It was a tough, hard run. It was only a 4 or 5 yard run, the first one he ran out of the Wildcat, but he looked explosive enough to see the hole, hit the hole, and get the conversion that we hadn't seen to this point. Period.
Yeah.
So it's interesting how that sort of seems like it's playing out.
Yeah, I agree.
He had two touchdowns in the game, right?
Yeah, the early one where he sort of just powered in, and then a late one where great cutback. Like they sort of tried to cut him off, and he saw the space and cut it back. But, you know, we talked about it going in. It was going to be hard to have. You weren't going to just go have a huge rushing day against them, but they really manufactured enough to move the chains and to keep them honest. And I thought they did a good job with that motion stuff, just using Juice a little bit, using Leggett a little bit.
Marion Brown had a nice one.
Yeah, and Marion Brown, man, that guy is so quick. He's so fast. But they, they do a lot of that motion all season long, but then they haven't handed it off as much to those guys. And then the last few weeks, because of Lloyd, they've kind of been forced to. But I think it's really forced the defenses to kind of acknowledge the edge.
You got to give it, and you got to spring one. And Carolina sprung a couple early in that game, which helped. And it was the same thing was on the Vanderbilt game. They ran three reverses on the opening drive against Vanderbilt, and then you got everybody off balance. This comes back to Marcus Satterfield, who deserves a lot of credit, obviously. But we have not often seen the punch and the counterpunch. Like Carolina has not always had the counterpunch ready, and the Vanderbilt game and the Tennessee game, I think that's what we've seen. They're setting stuff up.
Yeah, and I think we've seen the few times that we've seen this offense really go, first half of Vandy, whole game against Tennessee, the entire bowl game. It's been when Carolina has been able to execute its, I guess you call it its base stuff, whatever it's trying to do at the beginning. And then it's kind of gotten into a flow and they've been able to actually kind of build and do complementary plays. It's like when they aren't executing whatever they're trying to do at the beginning, it's like they never get to that complementary stuff. It's a pretty deep playbook. So once they get out there and there's, we've talked about that a lot, but once they get out there and they're executing at a high level and what they're trying to do off the top, you can, it kind of does build on itself and it kind of snowballs from there and the guys are having fun and everybody's getting involved then. Yeah. Like, I mean, Nate Atkins, as good as he's been, is probably not on the top five of what you go in saying, hey, this is a guy we got to get the football to. Mm-hmm. But when you're having a bunch of successful plays, making, you know, converting your third downs, they had what, two third downs they didn't convert?
They're 8 of 11, so three.
Eight of 11, and then we're 2 for 2 on fourth down. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, you're 10 for 13 combined on third and fourth down. So, you know, I think when you're on the field and converting, you get everybody involved and everybody's having fun. And then you can do the fun stuff like the throwback to Spencer from DeCarrion. And everybody's just having a lot more fun when the ball's getting spread around.
803-404-6100. It is a notebook dump day. So if you have any more thoughts from the Carolina-Tennessee game, any other observations, players that you feel like deserve to have their efforts highlighted, let us know. Love Chevy phone line, text line, Twitter, at Pearson Fowler, at Coach B Tweets, Wes Mitchell, GC, and GC Chris Clark.
So right now may be the perfect time for you to rethink how you pay for healthcare. And here's why. Not only is it open enrollment for a lot of people, it's also a time you can join MediShare and save even more than usual. It's true, for the typical family, switching to MediShare saves about $500 a month, which is obviously huge for a lot of people. But what's more, they like it. MediShare has double the customer satisfaction rate when compared to health insurance. Double. There are 400,000 members now. They've shared over $4 billion in medical bills. So, yeah, they can handle your bills, too. And here's the thing. If you join MediShare Complete right now, before November 30th, they will waive your new member fee. So you're going to save even more. MediShare is the gold standard in healthcare sharing. And joining right now makes a lot of sense. Again, pay no new member fees if you join now and start enjoying great savings and a great way to handle your health care. Call now, 844-57-BIBLE. That's 844-57-BIBLE, 844-57-BIBLE.
The World Tournament of Soccer happening in Qatar is finally here. And with all the weird kickoff times and all the other sports happening simultaneously, it can be kind of hard to keep up. So to make sure you're up to speed, be sure to listen to Qatar Kick Around for the daily wrap-up of all the action from the tournament. From the group stage all the way to the final, Andy, Lars, and Peter are here for you with recaps and opinions of what happened that day in Qatar. Everything can be found at thekickaround.com, the Cumulus podcast channel on YouTube, or wherever you listen.
It's the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour, presented by Firehouse Subs, founded by firemen, with Pearson Fowler, Chris Clark, and Wes Mitchell on the home of the Gamecocks, 107.5 The Game.
22 minutes after 11 o'clock, Tuesday morning. Welcome back into the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour. Pearson, Preston, Chris, Wes here with you, talking Carolina and Tennessee. I haven't talked a lot of basketball this week, but Josh keeps texting me and telling me to give away a, let's see, some tickets. Let me make sure I get this right. A pair of tickets to the men's game against Upstate. Game is on Friday. So we're not doing that right now. But later on in the show, we'll give you a chance to win some basketball tickets. That's fun. Cam Smith, Spencer Rattler, Nate Atkins, Tonka Hemingway. Whom have we not highlighted that had a stellar performance on Saturday?
I'm going to throw Darius and Marcellus into the convo just because I think, you know, I think maybe this is Herb Street mentioned it when I was rewatching it. They didn't really think that many teams had DBs or cornerbacks specifically who could just go out there and match up with Tennessee and allow the other guys to kind of, you know, go make plays. And, you know, I think Marcellus, give him some credit for stepping up. Like, I think, you know, Darius and Cam have sort of been South Carolina's two most consistent cornerbacks, and Marcellus has kind of been the third guy. Well, you know, when they made the decision to move DQ to safety and play Cam in the slot at nickel, which put him over Jalin Hyatt, that put the onus on Marcellus to have a really, really good game. And really, those three guys were going to have to play the whole way against an opponent that their entire identity is we're going to wear you down and, you know, go speedball on you, fast tempo, all this stuff. And those guys tackled well. They gave up some plays, but you knew they would. And they had a short memory. They kept going, kept playing. Yeah. They got lined up. If you watched Carolina's DBs, it's like, so Tennessee, obviously, the second a play is over, their receivers, they got a spot on the field. And you can see they're just like, I'm going to my spot. Well, Carolina's DBs were doing the exact same thing. It was play is over, sprint to my spot, get lined up. And, you know, I think this is one of those games, Chris and I talked about it yesterday. You can go through the entire roster of guys that played. Everybody did something to contribute to this win, because you don't win a game like that without everybody being involved. But so the deeper we go, we can probably show some love to everybody. But I thought the three of those guys, if you had bad corners, that game plan doesn't work whatsoever. They torch you.
To go to the offensive side of the ball, you know, I'll highlight the two guys that we talked about in the last segment when we were going over the PFF grades. PFF grades are a good reference. It's not an end-all be-all because, again, I couldn't look at anybody on that list. So-and-so had a bad game. No. Even if the grade says otherwise, bad or average, nobody on offense, I don't think, had an average game because, like Wes said, everybody contributed. So I'd say DeCarrion Joyner. I think just his presence, 19 snaps, right? But I remember he got a shout-out for his perimeter blocking. We have talked about that so many times this year. Like, there are a lot of stats where you can say if South Carolina does this, they typically win. If they block well on the perimeter, they've played well. If they don't, they don't, and it's very noticeable. DeCarrion did a good job blocking, did a good job in the pass game in the limited action, and obviously gave them something at quarterback, administering, whether it's him running the football or administering some of those plays. His presence there was key. And then Jaheim Bell, I mean, was big. He did just enough. I mean, averaged 4.8 yards a carry on a lot of those plays. It's not like there was a ton of room to run, but he got up in there inside and got 4 yards, and that's huge. The last week, nothing went right at all offensively, and you're getting, you know, a lot of those runs are no yards or a loss. He was able to give them some tough runs, and then, you know, was an asset in the passing game too. Had, you know, obviously the 5 catches for 39 yards and a couple scores out there in the flat. So I thought his presence was also really important with how they used him and what they did. And I think that's the key. I mean, for Jaheim, just his usage. I mean, I think it was his season high in snaps.
60-something?
60 snaps. I think it might have been 60 even. So they used him a lot, and they used him well. Now, one reason he was able to play so much is they stayed on the field. You can't play 60 snaps if the entire team plays 50.
Yeah.
So, but I thought those two guys were deserving as well of a shout-out.
Who had the lowest PFF grade, just out of curiosity?
I'll have to load that up for you.
Cool. Chris going to effort that. Y'all will be excited to know that during, well, I don't remember if it was the 9 o'clock or the 10 o'clock hour, but before you got here, Preston officially re-downgraded Josh Heupel to Jeff Heupel.
He's back. He's back to Jeff Heupel.
We did get a text from a
his
Jeff.
His gullet got bigger somehow after the game. His gullet hanging off of his chin got bigger somehow.
He's getting his gobbler ready for turkey season.
It must be.
What's the temperature instead of Jeff, Jim?
Jim Heupel?
If he loses to Vandy.
He's going down to Jim Heupel. Shout out to anybody named Jim out
there. Yeah, sorry about that.
Well, or Jeff. Jeff. So we're going to make somebody unhappy. We do have a text from somebody named Jeff that says, can you use another name other than Jeff as an insult for Mr. Heupel? It's a little insulting to the rest of us.
All right, done. Jim.
Moving on to Jim Heupel.
Just lit up.
At what point on Saturday night did he become Jeff again?
There was a point where he was on the sideline sort of crying about I forget what play it was, but he was just on the sideline crying, and he was shaking his head, and I just saw his
goblin.
Yeah, I saw his lower chin woven around. I was like, oh, look at
so
this.
So you
guy.
Had to actually see him, and then it like was made manifest.
Yeah, it brought it all back.
Or Jim, sorry.
Jim, shout out to Jeff, man. We appreciate you listening.
Yeah,
for sure.
Thanks, Jeff. Sorry about that. We'll change it for you, Jim Heupel. Now
we'll call you Jeffrey.
Yeah, I had somewhere else I wanted to go with this, but I can't remember now. So tell you what, we'll give you a chance to win some basketball tickets. How about that? If y'all want to go see the Carolina men's basketball game against USC Upstate.
Maybe we should just give them to Jeff.
Huh?
We should just give them to Jeff.
Jeffrey or Jeff? Yeah,
Jeffrey.
Jeffrey.
Because we've offended him.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Please take this as our making up for bringing dishonor to your name.
If you're still listening, Jeff, let us know if you accept our apology. If not, we'll have to make it right. But if you want basketball tickets, 803-404-6100, just be caller number 5. Right now, it's really simple. Call 803-404-6100 and be caller number 5, and I will give you, actually Josh will, not Heupel, our salesperson. He will give you a pair of tickets to go see the Carolina men's basketball game against USC Upstate this Friday, 803-404-6100. Caller number.
If you are 65 or older, you know this. Watching your hard-earned dollars fly out the window on healthcare costs is frustrating. Well, here's something that can really help, and it's worth taking a minute to look into. MediShare 65 Plus. MediShare is a community of Christians who share each other's healthcare bills, and it really is a community too. People encourage and pray for each other. Well, MediShare 65 Plus is a low-cost option for those with Medicare Parts A and B, and it fills in the gaps where Medicare stops. It's a great way to fight inflation too. You can lock in one low monthly price for up to 10 years. And it's easy. You can use any Medicare approved doctor or get 24/7 telehealth access from the comfort of your home. Very worth looking into during Medicare open enrollment, which ends December 7th. If you join right now, your second month share will be free. So don't miss this chance. Call 800-PSALM-16. That's 800-PSALM-16. 800-PSALM-16.
It's that time of year, in-law season. But I'm ultra-prepared with Auto Bell Car Wash. The team will have my car so clean inside and out, I'll enjoy a judgment-free ride with my in-laws.
Right now, buy one Super Poly Process Wash and get one 40% off online at AutoBell.com.
5, good luck.
It's the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour, presented by Firehouse Subs, founded by firemen, with Pearson Fowler, Chris Clark, and Wes Mitchell on the home of the Gamecocks, 107.5 The Game.
Tuesday morning. Welcome back in. It's the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour on 107.5 The Game, talking Carolina, Tennessee. Shane Beamer will wrap things with his weekly press conference a little bit later on this afternoon. 1:30, we'll have it for you live on 107.5 The Game. Also, Spencer Rattler, Darius Rush, Tonka Hemingway, Nate Adkins scheduled to speak today. I know fans will be eager to hear from each one of those guys. We'll have that for you throughout the course of the afternoon here. A quick update. Michael says that it should be Jethro Heupel.
Jethro Heupel.
Just less likely to offend people, I guess.
Done.
I want to come back to another tweet from Michael here that is a good one. But real quick, Jeff has responded. It sounds like he accepts our apology.
Thank you, Jeff.
But also adds that if Carolina keeps beating people like that, he will change his name.
Well, to what?
Jethro. No, I don't know. Jeff, let us know.
Thank you for thank you for listening to us, hearing us. We never meant to offend you. This is a great way to move through conflict.
I do like Jethro Heupel. That's good. It's a mouthful. Or Jim Heupel. Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
Michael's other tweet says, thought that Spencer Rattler on Saturday finally acted like himself out there. Cocky, trash-talking gunslinger. Didn't hold back until now. Felt like he was in his shell. I think that's a very good observation.
I think that is interesting. I think that is very interesting. And you feel it's obviously tough because he's been trying to fight against, and I hate this word, but there's no other way to put it, but a narrative that's been put around who he is as a person. And maybe sometimes you overcorrect and you forget some of the stuff that actually made you who you were. And obviously, they're still young folks, so they're trying to calibrate all of that. But that's a really interesting observation.
I mean, you come in, people are criticizing your mentality, your whatever, fair or unfair, and you wake up one day and you're Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
And you're like,
because you just
How
think
could
you,
this happen?
You think that's the right way to do it. Like, oh, Russell says Russell's boring. Maybe if that's
Russell says
for him,
let's ride. Let me say let's
yeah,
ride.
Yeah, you know, and then maybe that's not for you.
No, it's not. And it's, I mean, you mentioned this earlier. It's chicken or egg. Like, you're putting up 63 points on the number 5 team in the country. Of course you're having fun, but I would also make the argument that you did that because you were having fun. I don't know if Spencer can always channel that, but we all knew that was in there. Like, no one is surprised. He wasn't making throws that people didn't think that he could make. He was making exactly the throws that people thought that he could make. The fact that he was doing it, that he had the time, that he had the confidence, and he had the trust in everybody on his team, from the play caller to the offensive line to his wide receivers, is what stood out to me. And that's what is so challenging, because Carolina is not going to score 63 against Clemson. They're not going to score 53 against Clemson. Maybe they'll score like 42. Who knows? Probably not. It's a really good defense. But it's not like they can't do those things again. It's not like Spencer can't find those throws. It's not like Juice can't get open. It's not like the line can't protect.
And I think there is that little twinge of kind of disappointment, and that has kept some fans from completely enjoying what happened, not really even because of Spencer's play this year, but just the overall offensive play. You're not going to obviously score 60. I mean, that was a once in a who knows how long overall offensive performance. Like, enjoy that. Like, remember where you were. Like, that doesn't happen. But can you do some? Can the divide between 63? And your punter was your only touchdown be closed a little bit? You know what I mean? Like, I think that was the frustration from some fans. It's like, this, if anything, showed that there was the ability from this offense to put up a bunch of points. And, you know, I know you're going to have some off weeks, but there have been too many, obviously.
Well, your off week can't be 0 points. Your off week needs to be like 21.
Against a Florida defense that was not great. Like, honestly, I really like Missouri. I feel like that's a pretty good defense. You could kind of, if you look back, it's not that hard to kind of believe that happened. But, you know, to get nothing against Florida, then to do what you did against Tennessee, a Florida team that, by the way, got beat by Vanderbilt this past week, which we have not talked about. I mean, it's crazy to see such a big swing there. But, yeah, we saw, to get back to the caller's point or texter's point, we saw Spencer at his absolute peak on Saturday, and that's why you recruit him. Like, that was the unlocking of what he is capable of doing, and I would just love to have the probably will never see the light of day film from Gamecock Plus or whoever had the best on-field access, if there were some microphones. I would love to know what was being said during this game, because
he was doing a lot of counting.
Yeah, well, there was a lot of sort of looking to the sidelines from each team, like looking to the opponent's sideline, lots of talking, lots of jawing, kind of a chippy game, and I would love to know what was being said. But I think we saw, you know, Spencer's one of those guys who's going to be at his best when he plays with that air of, you can call it confidence, you can call it cockiness, you can call it whatever. But
I don't want my quarterback to be meek.
Like,
for
exactly.
whatever criticisms, again, fair or unfair, warranted or unwarranted, came with Spencer Rattler as he came to Columbia, I don't care. You don't bring him here. I mean, this sounds like shallow and maybe not true, but you're not bringing him here to be a pillar of the community. He's going to be here for 10 months and then he's gone. You're bringing him here to throw a hell of a lot of touchdown passes. Like, you don't need him to be the face of your program. You just need him to throw a lot of touchdown passes. And if he wants to be cocky, if he wants to count how many touchdowns he's got on his fingers, like, let him do that.
Well, you want him to be the guy that the opponents and the opponents' fans hate.
Yes.
But that you love. And when he's stiff-armed, dude, going out of bounds and was the one delivering the contact, that's when you already kind of knew. But I was like, okay, he is on one today.
Also, simultaneously, while proving that he had a cannon, he also proves my other theory that he's not an athlete. Because, was it a 3rd and 9? And he slid at 8?
8.
I was like, oh, man.
Yep.
I was just watching that play. 3rd and 8, he slid at 7.
He let it slid at 7.
Not the best. But there was one play. That one might have been it, where the spot was.
That's the only thing that kept him from getting a perfect grade all night. Yep.
That's what kept him from the 100.
That was it.
And I felt like, to give him credit, it wasn't a full baseball slide. Like, I feel like he was kind of trying to, like,
It was even worse. It was an awkward slide.
Because he was in between, I dive forward?
It's because he's not an athlete.
Slide and
definitely not dual threat.
He's a quarterback.
Did make some plays with his legs, but doesn't have to mean he's dual threat. Those things can be true, right?
on the first, drive of the game, I think that really set the tone, to come out, because Tennessee was 100% scoring on that first drive, right? Regardless of whether or not South Carolina did, it was easy. It was not easy the rest of the game. That drive was easy. Had a couple busts, right, for South Carolina. But they came out, and go look at the plays. It's not anything different from what they've been running this year, really. They had Joyner in on a couple of those plays. But you didn't see anything on that first drive where you go, well, this is new. No. But the difference was, maybe when they called those plays, maybe how they coached them during the week or some pointers they gave. But they converted a 3rd and 6 with an amazing throw by Spencer. He had the 3rd and 8 scramble, the 3rd and 7 scramble, got in position for a 4th and 1, converted that. They converted a 4th and 6. And then they had a touchdown pass to Jaheim on a play we've seen them run a lot, and it worked.
The difference was, and I don't know if this is what they were calling or the way that they coached Spencer up or what, but Carolina used the middle of the field in the passing game a lot more on Saturday than pretty much every other game except for maybe Arkansas. And I don't know if that was the types of plays they were calling or where they wanted Spencer's reads to be, or if it was just a matter of him finding those guys. I don't know if that's on Spencer or on Marcus or what, but they used the middle of the field to great effect. The 3rd and 20 to Juice Wells over the field, and I was watching the second half yesterday, Wes. You showed me the side-by-side where they ran the same concept with the really deep, the 18-yard dig. It was the same play. They just haven't run those plays this year. And part of it's because they haven't had the time, but the protection was so solid all day, it kind of afforded them that opportunity, I think.
I thought that play also demonstrated the difference in the mindset of the two defenses. Both of those plays, Tennessee dropped back and played coverage and sat in zone. And Carolina said, we're going to play man and go after you.
Yeah, they brought 6 every play, it felt
regardless of down and distance. And, Carolina kind of, it was the same exact play that they got him on with the same exact execution. But there were several moments in that game where you're just this is South Carolina's night. It's just their night.
Yeah. So with that in mind, we're not fully moving on yet. We're not talking about Clemson yet. We'll start that tomorrow. But one eye on Tennessee, one eye on the rest of the week. We all kind of laid out and agreed that it wasn't a total fluke, even if it's not exactly replicable. But Preston has introduced an incredible elephant into the room. Depending on the health of South Carolina's, to this point, best proven playmaker on offense, who is considered to be questionable. But what does South Carolina take away from Saturday? How much do they try to replicate it against Clemson? How much is this now the bread and butter of this team? And how much was it an aberration? We'll start to look ahead to what that matchup might look like next.
It's the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour. Presented by Firehouse Subs. Founded by firemen with Pearson Fowler, Chris Clark, and Wes Mitchell. On the home of the Gamecocks. 107.5 The Game.
Ten minutes in front of noon. Welcome back in. It's the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour. Pearson, Preston, Wes, Chris wrapping things up here on a notebook dump Tuesday. Shane Beamer press conference coming up in about an hour and a half. Player availability before that, and then tomorrow we'll officially start turning our attention to the Carolina-Clemson game. Before we do that, though, one big question looming, in my opinion, over this week is that South Carolina has clearly stumbled into something. This is a team that wanted its identity to be ball control. Marcus Satterfield said, run 58 plays a game, run for 275, pass for 225. Those were his words. That's what he wanted to do. And it looked like with Marshawn Lloyd as the focal point of the offense, that was the way to go. But South Carolina, even though they ran the ball reasonably well, they were clearly pass first and pass often on Saturday. If Marshawn Lloyd is healthy, how do you integrate him into what Carolina did Saturday? Or do you go back to where you wanted your bread to be buttered all season long?
I think obviously every game plan is going to be opponent dependent to an extent, but I think you got to lean into a lot of what you saw this past week. Maybe not quite to that extent, because you're going to be facing a Clemson pass rush that probably one of the most talented fronts you're going to face all year long. So I think you kind of, in a perfect world, hope that you can sort of do what you did this past week, but complement it a little bit more with a dynamic running back. And I wonder, you know, did we all lean a little bit too much into the, does this team have to be a run first, give Marshawn the ball?
That was what we heard from the coaches and the players.
Yeah,
we're just leaning on the information that they give us, and they're inside the program, so we got to default to them, right?
No, we were talking about Marshawn. Why didn't Marshawn get the ball? He's got to get the ball 25 times a game. You know, if he's not touching the ball, that's not smart. Whereas the ultimate goal for any great offense, I think, is that you can spread the ball around and do what we saw on Saturday. Now, that's difficult to do because you have to be able to execute a number of different things, a number of different skills to do that. You know, if anything, Marshawn not being in there did force them to have to get more creative.
Mm-hmm.
Now the question is, you know, if he plays, can you sort of re-implement him while still doing some of the other things and not have people say, well, why aren't you giving the ball to Marshawn the second things go bad?
Yeah, Chris, is it as simple as he just gets Jaheim 17 carries?
Marshawn gets them?
Yeah. Like those 17 just go to Marshawn from
Jaheim. He's going to get more for sure. I mean, he's going to get probably, if he's healthy, he's going to pick up at least most of those, and then you figure out
so
other ways
to implement.
So you
do swing back in that direction. Because, I mean, after what you saw, don't you want Spencer throwing it 37 times again against a Clemson secondary that's been the weak point of their defense?
Yeah, swing back in the direction. I think you keep doing what you did against Tennessee philosophically. Okay. I do think that Marshawn picks up Jaheim's snaps if he's healthy, or most of them at running back, and then you integrate Jaheim in some other ways, whether it's getting him carries or, you know, just other different things in the passing game. But it is a good point that, like, kind of where do you go? Because I remember at the beginning of the season, I certainly thought there's questions about the run game. They've lost Kevin Harris, Saquandre White, right? They didn't run it that well last year. You've got Spencer Rattler. You've got these receivers. So naturally, you know, my thought was pass to set up the run. Well, they didn't have a lot of success with that. Here comes Marshawn Lloyd. Okay, this team's identity. They're all searching for an identity. Now maybe it's run to set up the pass. That really didn't make it click either. And so if they can kind of, you know, two games left, but if Marshawn can return, we don't know yet. Don't have any idea here on Tuesday. But I think that's where they would lean, because, look, you mentioned those 17 carries. I mean, Jaheim, I thought, did a great job with those. A lot of that was yards after contact, tough runs. Marshawn has shown a knack for that.
Mm-hmm.
So if he can run inside, he can bounce it outside. If he could give you that element too, then you might have something. But it is an interesting balance. Like, getting Marshawn back does not make you a worse team.
Yeah.
That improves you, but it does give you some decisions from a personnel standpoint about, you know, which direction do you go.
Preston, Marshawn, if he's healthy, is going to be expecting a full workload. And Spencer is going to be expecting to do what he did last week. Someone's feelings are getting hurt in the locker room, assuming he's healthy, correct? Or is there a way to make this copacetic?
No, we can make this copacetic, because you can just point to the success they had last week. And this is why who matters so much. Obviously, don't know him personally, but I feel pretty confident thinking that Marshawn would accept a bit role or a spot role for the greater good of the team in this particular instance. Again, I don't know him personally, but just from all reports and all things that we do know, that's something that he would do, and he would excel in that position.
Yeah.
Marshawn has mentioned in the past, even during the recruiting process, remember Carolina was recruiting Marshawn and Tank Bigsby at the same time? And Marshawn even mentioned, like, hey, I'm good with that. Like, means I don't.
And that was a difference maker for Tank, right? Because he wanted to be the guy. Yeah. Wasn't that
despite what he said publicly? Yeah, I think that was definitely a factor. They got Marshawn, and then that you know magically fell off with Tank. But I mean, look, 17 carries—that's pretty good for a back in a game. That gives Marshawn plenty. If they
Jaheim
can get
up,
to
what,
that,
you
number.
Know, 80 on the ground is not 1-to-1 for the defense, like we mentioned. But you know, there were at least two plays that I remember, and Jaheim ran. That's the best he's run all year, in my opinion. But there were one or two plays where it's like, that's the cutback that Marshawn sees. The Jaheim's not a running back, so he and it was, you know, maybe still a good run, but would have been 10 more yards if it was Marshawn in there.
Yeah, it's just difficult because it just changes personnel groupings, as Chris said.
Yeah.
Now I don't know. the coaches will have some decisions to make for sure.
Yeah, hopefully they do, because hopefully he's healthy. It may not matter. The decision may be out of their hands. Shane Beamer will have an update on that almost certainly later on this afternoon. 1:30 is his press conference, and of course we'll have it for you live here on 107.5 The Game. That's all we have time for. We'll be back again tomorrow. Start to look ahead more to the Clemson game. Appreciate you all listening. I know it's been a fun first couple days of the week. It'll be a fun back half of the week as well. Appreciate y'all listening. As always, Halftime Show is coming up next.
You're worried about the economy. Inflation is high. Your paycheck doesn't cover as much as it used to. And we live under the threat of a looming recession. And sure, you're doing okay, but you could be doing better.
The Afford Anything podcast explains the economy and the market, detailing how to make wise choices on the way you spend and invest.
Afford Anything talks about how to avoid common pitfalls, how to refine your mental models, and how to think about how to think.
Make smarter choices and build a better life.
Afford Anything, wherever you listen.